Hi, I'm Elvis Mitchell, and thanks for listening to The Treatment. Some of the most entertaining stories produced today, however, are not on the big screen, but they can be heard on KCRW's Unfictional, intimate stories and artful documentaries crafted by some of the most talented radio producers across the world. Check it out. You can find Unfictional on KCRW's iTunes page. From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Some of us discovered Broad City a little while ago, not exactly in 2009 when the webisode started, but now there's a New Yorker piece. You can actually find curated walkthroughs of the webisodes online. They've been on the cover of New York magazines. So now I'm thrilled that the stars and creators of Broad City have come to join me on the show. Abby Jacobson, Alana Glazer, welcome so much to the show. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
This is nuts.
What a thrill. Thank you so much.
I want to tell you guys, one of the things I really like about what you do with the show, and the thing for me that separates it from a lot of other stuff on the web, is that when you talk, you're listening to each other, which is a really specific sensibility. Because so much comedy stuff online is about somebody waiting to show somebody up. You can almost see the anticipation in the other actor. And you must get a lot from people who note the way you guys listen to each other when you talk.
I never heard that before. Me neither. But, you know, the thing that's funny, I think, I feel this way. You probably do, too. I often feel I'm reacting a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm reacting sometimes more than acting, especially with Alana's character. When I'm playing the straight man part, which
not this season
as much, but
gone wild.
Maybe I'd say 70%. I'm still 60%. I'm still the straight man.
I don't think Jeremy thinks you were the straight man in so many ways.
I know. I'm like,
no, but like a lot of the times when Alana and Abby are having a conversation, I often feel like so much is just in looks. In processing what she says.
Well, I guess
there's
I felt
a lot
that way
of reaction.
More so this season, too.
You have
myself.
To be, like, jokes are in the reaction as well. So it's not just what you say, it's every bit of your, you know, reacting is equally as important. So you have to really pay attention.
It does feel fresh that when you say it. I'm like, yeah, people don't. Like, at first I was like, is it a woman thing? Women, like, are, like, trained to listen to, like, dudes talk. So we're, like, we actually, like, hear each other. Is that what – that's interesting. I hadn't – you said you must hear this, but I've never heard that before. I wonder what it is. But I agree. It's a huge part of grounding the reality.
It really is, because it makes you feel like you're watching – you're not watching performance anymore. And I've had people on – I've had Nick Kroll, a few people from UCB who say part of it is just UCB is not about that kind of – aggressive comedy when you're trying to upstage each other. And that's clearly part of it, isn't it?
That's a fundamental lesson that you're taught when you come up at UCB, which is in order to not think you have to be listening to the person.
Right.
Like, don't
to be
think
truly
is
present.
Their, like, motto.
And to be truly present, you have to be actually listening like you would in real life, because this is real life.
Because sometimes I find myself in real life, like, oh, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say.
Right.
And I have to stop myself from doing that. Because you want to be – that means you're not listening at all.
And conversely, in the show, sometimes we will be so present in the moment that we'll be like, oh, Jesus, we're filming a show here, you know?
And on stage, you can tell.
Right.
At UCB, you can tell when someone – because you're like, they didn't hear that last bit. Right. Or they would have said what they just said.
You can hear somebody having their, like, joke ready to, like, put it on the table.
Yep.
And another little theory I just came up with is, like, post – like, comedy boom of people just jabbing into a mic. I feel like even stand-up is more listening, more – there's more silence, more conversation between audiences in its, like – I don't know, in the alt stages of, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s, post, like, that 85 to 95 comedy boom. You know, it started becoming, like, an alternative to that first thing posed. So maybe comedy in general – is about listening more than it used to be.
It's funny because one of the things that I can clearly get from you guys, that you came to New York, and somebody who comes to New York, and the thing that movies and TV shows about New York don't get, and the thing the show, even the webisodes did so well, is how your space is invaded all the time, that people almost always get too close to you. And I can see that because neither of you guys grew up in the city. So when you come to Manhattan, it's the sort of thing that – I wonder how much of it's intuitive versus being conscious for you guys that space plays so much a part in the comedy.
I'm thinking about the first pilot we wrote, the very first pilot.
Is that one you guys did for FX?
Yeah. And just like even like the first draft of that one even, we like realized that our writing process together, you know, we'd written a script before that, but this was like, you know, starting like the hoping to start a flow of scripts to be written. But we got so caught up in the minutiae. We like love the minutiae. We love those little details. We had like Abby be able to like touch both walls from her bed. And it was, you know, when we got to like talking
about
it. We got
so angry with the art department because we're like, this is not it.
They're like,
it's too big.
It's not just like, oh, we don't want to represent that kind of reality. It was like, we can't film. It's not going to, you know, for the budget that we have, we can't create like a fake little bedroom. And it was like, yeah, I guess you're right.
But it is so – it's so specific to New York transplants. Mm-hmm. So I think if you grew up in New York,
you're used to it.
It's not a weird thing. You probably find it weird when you get out of New York and there's space.
Like when you were here in Santa Monica.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Inside.
It's like, what's going on?
But yeah, it felt – it's a thing that we often talk about, the space, feeling these the stresses or the struggles of when you move to New York, the – space issues, the smell of New York, like all those things. But at the same time, it's still this romantic feeling of being in this special place. So I hope that
– it's like loving the garbage smell, you know? It's like
or like every once in a while you turn the corner, you're in this garbage and you turn the corner and there's like the most beautiful view of something. I hope that comes across still.
And New York is so much about the, like, texture in the air, you know? Like, we do definitely try to honor the feeling of space there. Even, you know, like, we were just talking about, like, neighborhoods, like, in the Lower East Side when you look down to Soho and it's low buildings. You're like, oh, I have space compared to when you're, whatever, in Flatiron or something. Yeah, that's huge to us. We love, like, if possible, making the audience, like, really feel what you feel when you're wherever it is that we're trying to convey.
But that thing that space means to you guys, and again, I'm a transplant New Yorker myself, so it's just shocking to just watch you guys like walk through the subways or just on the street. I just was thinking back to the commute and just how
right.
You just sort of make this agreement with yourself, this is what's going to smell like until I get out of this place.
Yeah.
And you talk about minutiae, Alana, but I mean, that kind of minutiae to me is really what the show is about. And it's as much about loving it is also kind of just saying, well, this is the way it's going to be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like accepting, like in relationships, like accepting its flaws or weaknesses mm-hmm. and loving that too. It really is like that full love.
Needing to be there. Like those characters for whatever reason. I think right. most people that move to New York feel like they can right. only be there. They have to be in New York for whatever
at
reason.
That time.
Or why would you?
Right.
Like you, it's
right.
it, just at a certain point, it's sort of like this has to give you more than those, because it can be a stressful place. So it has to provide you with something.
Some like intrinsic value that's like feeding back to you that like it has to be meaningful to you because otherwise it is too hard.
Because recently I've been with people who were like, I do not know why you would live in New York.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me because I do. I can understand their point of view, but I'm also like, how would you not want to?
Also, what you just said about, like, committing to a smell in a place and being like, that's what this is. I also feel that way when we're actually filming. You know, that subway cold open was, like, gnarly. You know what I mean? It was sweaty and smelly. We created that scenario. And it's, like, so gross, but it is also, like, funny in this, like, George Costanza frustration way where it's like, this is funny that we're – why are we doing – you know, why did we choose to represent and portray this? But –
but that vibe of the city almost seems to inform the characters, that your character is so wound up and verbally assaultive and basically sort of staking territory. And
right.
and Abby, for you, the way you play Abby, I'll call her just for sake of
yeah.
conversation
mm-hmm.
here, she wants a chance to breathe. And just using these two comic poles, is that something that sort of formed for you guys on stage? And because it's immediate, even in the webisodes. We know who you guys are just from the framing. I mean, the camera's a little closer to you, Alana, than it is to you. So those are all things that you worked out.
I'm thinking particularly in the that like framing of the like acquiring pot. And I'm like, oh, this is the best day of my life. And you're like, I'm 26. That's interesting. You're like are thinking about it. You're like in space a little bit. And I'm just like focused on this one little thing up close. Can't believe my girls. You know, like that's funny. That's so true.
You know, I'm thinking about when we made the web series. And the reality of the characters was the reality of the two of us, which was Alana moved to New York. She was 18 to go to college. She went to NYU in New York. I moved after I went to college. I went to school in Baltimore. And it's approaching the city at a totally different time, even though it's only 4 years apart.
But they're formative
years. Very different times in your life where when you're in college, it's all like, get it, get it, get it. Like, it's all new and more aggressive, I think. And when you are starting life after college, it's a very – I think – we still play that way where I think my character, there's a little bit more weight to everything where it's like, okay, I'm like, I've been trying to do this for a little bit longer. Something's got to give, you know?
And it's like Alana doesn't even realize that it's not working quite yet.
Yeah, you know? She's still – yeah.
But that to me is that it's you guys have both been talking about it. It's a generational thing, I think. And it's weird to me that it's so much of it started in New York. A lot of people like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey come from Chicago to bring that there. But still, it sort of took root in New York. I think it was a crucial time where people just kind of realized we can't kill each other doing this anymore. Because there's even a generosity in UCB audiences, I think, that you tend to not see in other places.
Not to be super heavy, but we were just talking about real estate post 9/11. I wasn't in the city at that time, but I think that must have been a huge –
That's a big
huge,
part of that.
I mean,
you really saw it after that. It was very different.
I'm getting chills. Like, just like
– Me too.
Like, ooh. Just like what a bizarre shakeup to the country's conscience, you know? And it was like, no. What is this, like, this crap? That, like, these, you know, fake – I don't know. I think a lot of veils came down after that. And walls came up too.
But I think it was really a lot of boundaries – and defenses came down.
Right.
Comedy became interestingly communal. I mean, because you hear these stories about what Second City was like back in the day or the Compass Theater, and those people were still incredibly aggressive. I mean, they would kind of go after each other. And a lot of that's gone now. I mean, the kind of guy that Jason Mantzoukas plays in one of the episodes is almost making fun of that previous era of comedy, that sort of manly douche kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so grateful for just the bizarre, perfect timing of things because I hate that shit. I hate it.
It was so – it still is. I mean, we're a little bit out of the loop right now. We still perform live. We do our Broad City Live show as much as we can, but we're not as immersed as we were for years. I'm hoping other art forms have these communities. I think they do, where people are just curious and supportive and you're all hoping that we're all, like, building it up together. And then when as you're growing together, you just help each other. Mm-hmm. But it's such a special community.
I know. I think the like other communities do have that, but comedy, something about comedy, the importance of comedy to our culture. I think as like with the internet and as everything becomes like more transparent and it's just like, ooh, this world is bleak. It's like rough. And as we're seeing that so quickly, like bad news so fast. Comedy has become, like, so important, and I feel like people are, like, unabashedly value it, you know?
In comedy, there's so many ways to work as a team and work as groups, and you need other people. And that was a big thing for us coming up. It was, like, so many people were a part of
just
our web series and everything.
Think of, like, somebody helping you, like, book the guests or people.
And also people in the audience.
Oh,
performance,
yeah.
Like you wanting you to succeed.
Exactly.
Oh, and on the internet audience. I mean,
right.
That is –
right,
a bigger part of our community, which, I mean, that is the same community sharing. The UCB also online just was, like, pumped out, just, like, supported that. And that is a huge part of why
our web series got
everything.
We have to take a break here because I have to go check with my broker.
No!
We'll be right back. It's The Treatment. My guests are the stars and creators of Broad City, Abby Jacobson and Alana Glazer. It's fun. Come back. There's more to come.
KCRW's popular iPad Music Mine app is now available for the iPhone. From quick discovery to deep exploration, take KCRW music with you wherever you go. Download at kcrw.com/musicmind.
We're still going deep. It's The Treatment. On Comedy Central is where you can find the show now, because FX didn't get it. It's no Justified. This show is Broad City. My guests are its stars and creators, Effie Jacobson and Alana Glazer. But you guys are talking about something that I think is you don't really talk about that much in terms of the creation of the characters. Because when you come to a place when you're in college, you come on a pass. You're cocooned from the city. So you get to sort of play in it, but you'll go back to your clubhouse at night. And coming as an adult, you're coming to say, I'm coming here to work. So you do have a different relationship to this place, and that really informs the characters that you guys play too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it totally does. This is the first time I've ever actually really realized
that
this.
We're even talking about this. Well, that's funny.
Just Alana on the show is not in college anymore, but we treat her like she is.
Well, she acts like
she
is.
We treat her because right. That's when we met. I think we are using always the dynamic that when we met and we're just sort of like
bringing them along.
Bringing along, but it separates the two of them, and it separates where they are, and I think that we will obviously see some growth at some point with those where they both are. But I think it is a thing where it has felt like Alana is still in that mental state of being in college.
Which is interesting because, like, when I came to the city, like, I knew I was just going to do comedy, you know? But, like, I do still think of it as NYU as, like, a way to have had – to be able to live there. But – I don't know, like the comedy community, I'm like, was that my reality or my departure from reality, you know?
Well, what did it feel like to you when you first got there, Abby, when you got into the city? What did it feel like?
Oh, my goodness.
I lived in Astoria for a long time. My first 5.5 years in New York, I was in Astoria.
And she was also in the Bevers
situation. That apartment is – we were really drawn from like 22 – that was me at 22 – I moved to New York to go to the Atlantic Theater Conservatory, 2-year acting program. I wanted to do drama. And that's what I wanted to do. And it was not for me. A weekend, I was like, this is not for me. And I had to make the decision of what to do. Do I quit, which I felt terrible doing, or do I stay? And I would lose my deposit. Like, I had to make that decision.
Because of that deposit.
Big deposit. Yeah. My roommate at
Which
the time.
Which is kind of like, it's like great. It was
that huge.
It gave you a deadline
a
in a way.
Oh, it was great. You know? I'm so happy that happened. I probably would have stayed because I'd be too afraid. I moved to do this a weekend. I'm going to quit. And my roommate at the time, who is this Melody, my roommate on the show, that role
our,
was my roommate at
our
the time.
Our Marist.
And,
I was hoping she's we will never see her really. I'm hoping.
I don't think so.
Because it's, when you go into the apartment, it sort of becomes a Samuel Beckett play.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's so no sound, no 3D. It's like so weirdly like.
There's a lot of like pent up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's how I was. It was such a defining moment for me where I couldn't communicate. I communicate much more with Bevers than I did with the guy that. And it was a very short amount of time. He only lived in our apartment for a month and a half.
But it felt like forever when it
was happening.
And
it was
a
really –
if you have somebody who's that intrusive and that acquisitive and that completely – I mean, it's funny because this brings up the thing I like about the show that is sort of literally and figuratively about appetites.
Wow. Yeah.
That does make sense for what we were saying, our differences before, like insatiable versus like little bits at a time. Which is how I eat.
And it's great to like be able to use an experience that was considered brief as a big component of the show. Because the emotion, however short it was, still can be stretched and used in a bigger way.
Because that like plot point in your personal narrative, it like it's just like a – when it's over, you're not even dealing with it anymore. So it's just kind of like a symbol that we can transpose onto other
and
stuff.
And to use my character, in a big way, is the part of me when I was younger. I hope I'm better at it now, of not knowing how to express yourself, not knowing how to communicate, and that experience was like my. It was the worst,
and
I didn't even know you at this time,
but it makes me so.
It was
angry.
Before.
It was also unexpected. She like got into the situation, and then the guy And then Bever slipped there.
But I will say, this roommate of mine is the one who, in this, me wanting to quit this conservatory, is the one who said to me, you know, I think you should go to this place, the Upright Citizens Brigade. She went to college with me and she said, your video work, I did video stuff in college. She was like, I really think you would like this place. And I, since we do not talk anymore, I haven't seen this girl in years. She probably hates me.
I know. She probably thinks you are such a bitch.
And I wrote her, and
but it's,
I was like,
come on, it's so good. It's so good.
Thank you. No, she knows. And they're not, she's not even with that guy anymore. And it wasn't even anything like
not.
He wasn't even like him. Like, the, we amplified that. We wrote that for John. He plays it the most.
Is that because he wouldn't sell you guys cookies? Is that why he got?
Oh, it's because he's too delicious.
He is like such
he is a cookie. He is a cookie, a man made of cookies.
But this, but this thing about these appetizers, I mean, it's there's so, even when you finally, when Atkins, I'm sorry, forgive me saying you, when Abby finally gets her chance with Jeremy, and it's suddenly we get to see this guy who seems like he's very deliberate and measured and looks like he's one of the guys they pick off the street to be in the J. Crew catalog.
Yep.
It suddenly has these appetites, too. It's this thing that, for me, links everybody on this show. At one point or another, they come out. Is that a deliberate thing that you guys do? I just kind of wonder about that.
I just never thought of it in that way. That's just like a specific lens. I love it. I love it.
Appetite. I think in comedy and in drama, the favorite, my favorite parts are when, not reveal, when you're confessing. When a character is confessing something about themselves, not literally yet in confessional or whatever, but
vulnerability,
yeah.
And
so,
when the truths come out.
Yeah, and so when we can expose those in a natural way, like, he's not sitting me down and being like, I like, this is the way I like to have sex. This is my favorite way. It's just, it's happening.
And it's also,
and the
like,
same thing, whenever that happens with any character, when they're revealed, they feel comfortable enough to expose a truth about themselves, that's the best. It took Abby's character, she had to get so high on meds to actually say how she felt about him. And then it's like, he felt the same way. I love writing stuff like that because I think that's how we hope that everyone is.
Just, I mean, like, as you were talking about, like, vulnerable, like, characters being vulnerable, I was like, that's my favorite part of life.
Yeah.
I love people's secrets. And when they're like, here goes, I'm just going to say this thing, it's just like, oh, my God, you can't even believe. I have this, like, idea, divine cinema. It's like the, like, movie going on that you, like, see. It's like this divine cinema that's like, I can't even believe this is happening in the movie. I can't, you know, whatever it is, whatever it is. Like, even just, like, a little moment. That is, like, our thing of, like, trying to represent reality instead of, like, create representation.
And by this way, it's okay to be a Broad City geek because that's why you're here. Because
yeah,
I'm one, too. It's the treatment.
Cool.
By the way, I'll remind you, talking to the stars of the show on Comedy Central, it's Broad City, the stars and the creators, Abby Jacobson and Ilana Glazer. Well, it's funny because the thing I feel, too, it makes the show kind of generational. It's about the way that people under 30 look at the world, where there aren't these kinds of schisms and between gender or race, except when somebody claims ownership of it for conversation.
Well,
I mean,
so,
oh, this belongs to me now. You know, let me tell you about slavery. What are you telling me about slavery?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like, I don't know, man. If, I don't know if you should be the best. You're the best person to be talking about it.
Yeah, but but I'd love to, because again, it's just about, for me, Ilana so often claiming territory in conversation. Again, it's her way of sort of, it's getting back to what New York does. You have to claim the space, or another of my favorite moments when Abby has to place to herself and she's running around naked with her arms up like she's worshiping Venus or something. I mean, that's her getting space. And I'm not trying to be reductive about this, but I just like that these things are subtextual rather than stated, because so much of comedy is about being goal-oriented and saying these things, isn't it?
I love that you're drawing these connections, because, I mean, I think it is just something we've never had this conversation before. I think it's something that we just feel, maybe, right?
Yeah, I think it's more true to life, probably, that truths aren't always stated and just lived in.
Because one of the things, just in reading all these things, that it seems like every party who talks to you sort of conflates you with your characters and wants to try to be friends with you. And that's got to be a little off-putting after a while, but dealing with... But it's a tribute to how vivid these characters are and the hunger for this kind of experience that I think is, in a broad way, not, forgive that word, not so specific to New York. It's this generational thing where the world belongs to you and it's a lot more inclusive, except when you want to make a point that is not inclusive.
Right. Like, I know, like, I was just thinking, like, I can only process, like, 3 minutes behind, but I was just thinking about what you were saying about, you know, like, Alana, like, appropriating black culture. It's like the levels of consciousness, both in New York, but then also, I don't know if it's New York or generational, where it's like, in New York, it's like so stimulating that it's like, and the same with the white power suit. It's like, oh my God, it just hit me. Because like, there's like too much stimulation going on, you know? And that is true. That is a generational thing where it's just like click, click, swipe, swipe, like too much like saturated stimulation. And like having to try so hard to listen, to actually hear it.
But I feel like, and what's, I think so many people love about the relationship is that the two people you guys do listen to when you don't sort of become these neurotic versions of yourselves, where Abby is too eager to sort of please and doesn't want to say the wrong thing, and Alana doesn't have to take these positions because she sort of takes positions in conversations with other people. You're sort of your true selves with each other, and you can, Abby can correct Alana, and Alana can tell Abby the way she sort of needs to take command of her life. And I think people respond to the enormous affection these two people have for each other in a way that's not just trying to create false abrasive things that are off in the context of comedy. You know, just these fake conflicts that don't mean anything.
Right, right, right. Like, well, that's kind of what I mean about, like, rather than creating representation, just like, what's sure. What looks funny? It's like, no, like, let's start from a seed of, like, real weight and gravity, and it'll, like, blossom into, it'll be funny. Like, that's all we're trying to do, you know? So to start from a real place, real experiences, our writers' experiences, our friends, we always take experiences, and our writers' friends, just starting from a real place, it makes it, I think, the comedy funnier in juxtaposition to the reality.
Before we go, one thing I want to say, I like saying, thinking about the show is, you guys are so often running. There's a lot of running in the show.
Yeah, real life too. We just had this experience recently where we had a meeting and we were at one place and they like changed the location and thought we were a half hour early, and then after waiting an hour ended up being half hour late sprinting together, and we're just like, we're in an episode.
It's weird because running. Maybe it's just us. I don't know what's wrong with us, but I feel that way in New York where I could always be like, oh my, all of a sudden like on, it's sort of on an adventure or on a like, I'm late or I got to get there or like this thing happened and you're in one neighborhood and how do I get to the next? And there's like all these quick decisions you have to make.
Some Dr. Seuss. Where you're like, what is going on? Yeah. And then by the end, it makes sense.
A big obstacle course all the time.
But in the beginning, it's like puppets and monsters and like crazy shit. And then you're like, all right, I'm back in reality.
But I think at the same time, I think those characters, as much as they are running, they're playing. Like it's
playing.
They're playing.
That's right.
That's why they're there. It's an energy that you do not get everywhere else.
To play. That is so right.
And I'm sorry, we're out of time. You guys have to come back.
Elvis, no!
Well, you asked so nicely. We'll go on. No. There are other shows on this station. I have to let you go. Will you please come back?
Yeah.
We would love to.
This was such a pleasure. I learned a lot about our show.
Me too. We're heading into writing. This is so helpful.
This is really good.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Okay. Nobody's ever done that before. It's The Treatment. My guests are the stars and creator of Broad City, Abby Jacobson and Alana Glaze. I'm so happy to have you guys. I'm stumbling.
Thank you.
I'm such a fan.
Such an honor. Thank you so much. Such an honor. Thank you.
Let me thank some people. Our recording engineer who also mixes the show is Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I am Elvis Mitchell. I'm going to go buy some real estate in New York. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.